Madhya Lila, Chapter 19. All glory is to Lord Vishvambhar, the Lord of all the Vaishnava devotees. You bring the living entities back to your fold by giving them devotional service. The Lord performed his supramundane pastimes in Navadvip, hidden from the vision of gross materialists. He went to different devotees' homes and engaged in pleasurable pastimes with Nityananda, Gadadhar, and other associates. The Lord is the source of all spiritual ecstasy for the devotees, and in his association they see everything in relationship to Lord Krishna. They are completely oblivious to the phenomenal world, because they are engrossed in relishing the transcendental mellow of chanting the holy names of Krishna. They have no other business. Foremost amongst these intimate associates of the Lord is Advaita Acharya. His character is unfathomable, and only a few devotees know his transcendental position and how close he is to the Lord. Whenever Lord Chaitanya came out of his ecstatic trances, he would immediately render service to the assembled Vaishnavas, especially to Advaita Acharya. These dealings of the Lord were the cause of Advaita's constant discontent. His hurt feelings rumbled in his mind like an active volcano. He thought, "He is constantly deceiving me like a thief. He gives up his position and tries to stealthily catch my feet. I cannot match his strength, for he is supremely powerful, so he forcibly takes the dust from my feet. The only recourse I have is devotional service, because without spiritual realization, one cannot recognize the Supreme Lord Vishvambhar as he is. People call me Advaita the Lion-Hearted, and I become further deluded by this. This thief defeated Bhrigu Muni. I will gather about me hundreds of disciples like Bhrigu. Lord Chaitanya has appeared to explain the path of devotional service, and I will firmly oppose his instructions. Naturally, this will outrage him, and he will have to punish me, catching me by the hair." Preoccupied with these plans, Advaita left Navadvip accompanied by Haridas Thakur. He came home and remembered all that he had planned, and he became obsessed by that one goal. He began to read and explain a book called Yoga Vashishta, which subscribed to the impersonalist thought and which was contradictory to the path of devotional service. He explained that according to Yoga Vashishta, the path of deductive knowledge or empiric speculation was the essence of self-realization. Without understanding the deductive path of knowledge, the path of devotion becomes impotent. Thus, empiric knowledge is the essence of everything. Many persons leave home to live in the forest, not understanding that this wealth of knowledge is there in the deductive path. The path of devotion to Lord Vishnu is like a mirror, and the path of deductive knowledge is compared to the eyes. What use does a blind man have for a mirror? I have thoroughly studied the different scriptures, and I have readily arrived at the conclusion that empiric knowledge is the ultimate goal. Haridas Thakur is more than familiar with the ways and nature of Advaita Acharya, and when he heard the Acharya's attempt to explain everything in light of empiric knowledge, he merely laughed. Such is the transcendental characteristic of a pure devotee like Advaita Acharya. Those who are righteous can easily understand his position, but the offensive fools are rejected. Lord Vishvambhar, who is the most munificent Supreme Personality and who fulfills all desires, perceived in his heart Advaita Acharya's desire. One day he was promenading the streets of Navadvip with Nityananda Prabhu, observing his own creation. Lord Brahma, the creator of this universe, was watching all these activities of the Lord and feeling very fortunate and elated, and he thought to himself, "The Supreme Lord is appreciating my artistry in engineering this creation." The two of them looked like two full moons sailing across the sky as they moved about with charming gracefulness. The residents of Navadvip could see them each according to his own devotion. The demigods were also surveying the movements of the two moon-like lords, but remained unseen to the human eyes, and they wondered in their minds. They were seeing two moons, and because of this they mistook their own heavenly abode as the earth, and the earth as the heavenly planet. They also erred that they were the earthly beings and the earthlings were the residents of heavenly planets. They began talking with each other about the mystery of the two moons. Someone said, two moons together were never permitted entry into the heavenly planets. Someone else said, let me tell you that one of them is the original moon and the other is his reflection. Yet another said, the Son takes to the Father in all respects. So one is the Father Moon, and the other is his son, Mars. It is not in the least bit surprising that the demigods are bewildered by the Lord's beauty. For even the Vedas are inadequate to fully describe the Supreme Lord's extraordinarily charming looks. So the two lords moved about in Navadvip. Then Lord Vishvambhar said to Lord Nityananda, let us go to Shantipur, to Advaita Acharya's house. Both lords were always ready to engage in pleasurable pastimes, so they immediately headed for Advaita Acharya's house. Almost halfway to Shantipur, they came across a village called Lalitpur, situated on the banks of the Ganga. There, in a hut by the river, lived a householder sannyas. Lord Vishvambhar inquired from Nityananda Prabhu, please find out whose abode this is. Nityananda Prabhu replied, Lord, this is a sannyasi's residence. Lord Vishvambhar said, if our fortune permits, we might see him. Let us go. Happily, they went in and offered obeisances to the sannyasi. The sannyasi was taken in by Lord Vishvambhar's charming appearance, perfectly shaped limbs, and radiant smile. The sannyasi, being extremely pleased, blessed him, saying, may you be blessed with wealth, fame, learning, and a beautiful wife. The Lord immediately replied, dear sir, Goswami, this is really not a blessing. Please tell me, may you receive Krishna's blessings. Such a blessing brings one to the platform of devotional service to Lord Vishnu and is eternal, inexhaustible, and infallible. It is not becoming of your position to bless me with these other materialistic advantages. With a false laugh, more out of displeasure than anything else, the sannyasi replied, now I have direct proof of the axiom I have heard so often, that if you try to do good to people, they will take it in a bad way. This is exactly the manner in which this young Brahmin has reacted. I was very pleased and I wished him all success, but he turned my words around and even started blaming me. The sannyasi inquired, tell me, O young Brahmin, why do you fault my blessings? If a man is born into this world and has not enjoyed the company of an attractive woman, or has not collected sufficient wealth, then what is the use of his living? I was wishing you success in this kind of pleasurable life, but you are ashamed and reluctant to receive it well. You may be a devotee of Lord Vishnu, but how will you maintain yourself without earnings? The Lord simply smiled at his words and placed his hand on his forehead in a gesture of sheer fatigue at the sannyasi's gross foolishness. The Lord utilized this situation to teach everyone that one should not ask for any blessings other than devotional service to the Supreme Lord. He said to the sannyasi, listen, O Goswami, whatever food we eat comes automatically due to our karma or as a result of our previous activities, whatever is destined for us. If people take birth for the sole purpose of family life with wife, children, and earnings, then why is he forced to leave everything at death? No one desires to be sick and ailing, so why do various diseases attack us and make us suffer? The reason for all this is karma. Everything is a result of our previous activities. Only the elevated and knowledgeable persons have full understanding about these facts. Some persons point out that the Vedas say that the final goal of human life is to be elevated to the heavenly planets. The real understanding of this Vedic injunction is that the Vedas have so enunciated out of extreme leniency towards the ignorant people. Materialistic and ignorant people are naturally inclined to a life of luxury and physical pleasures. So knowing this well, the Vedas have recommended accordingly. The Vedas are not to be blamed for this. The general mass of people think that by chanting God's name and taking ablutions in the Ganga, one acquires wealth and success in family life, and so they respect and take shelter of the Vedic injunctions. But the real result of such performance is that one quickly develops devotion to the Supreme Lord. And so the ignorant people who do not understand the purport of the Vedic injunctions reject the fruit that leads to devotional service to Krishna and endeavor after materialistic pleasures. Please consider well all these points, O Goswami, because there is no goal or activity superior to devotional service to Lord Krishna. Thus the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Instructor, aiming these instructions toward the whole world, spoke to the sannyasi and pointed out that devotional service to Lord Krishna is the ultimate purpose of the Vedas. All these instructions of Lord Vishvambhar are indeed the absolute truth, and those whose hearts are contaminated due to sinful activities cannot receive them to heart. The householder sannyasi smiled and thought to himself, "This young Brahmin must have become a lunatic due to the effect of some mantra. It may also be that the person dressed as a sannyasi who is accompanying him has somehow mesmerized him." The sannyasi spoke out loud, "Finally, it has happened. In front of a mere child, I suddenly know nothing. I have traveled around the world, Ayodhya, Mathura, Bhadrakashram, Gujarat, Kashi, Vijayanagar, Ceylon, and to many other cities. And now, I am not supposed to know any longer what is good and bad. I have to learn all this from a suckling baby." Still smiling, Lord Nityananda replied, "Listen, Goshai, you don't have to unnecessarily argue with a mere child. I am well aware of your position and fame. Please just consider my proposal, as I am older, and forgive us for whatever has happened." Hearing his own praises being sung, the sannyasi became once again amiable and requested his guests to take food. Lord Nityananda said, "We must leave right away, since more urgent business must be attended to, but you can pack some eatables for us, which we can eat after our bath on the way." The sannyasi insisted, "Take your bath here. Take your meal, and after a cooling rest, you can be on your way again. The two supreme personalities have descended to this mortal world for the sole purpose of delivering the most fallen souls." And so they spent time with the householder sannyasi. They washed away their weariness in the cooling waters of the Ganga and then returned to the sannyasi's dwelling. They offered some ripe mangoes, jackfruit, and milk to Lord Krishna and then relished this Krishna prasadam in the presence of their pleased host. The sannyasi was following the left-handed school of Shakti worship, and they are used to consuming wine. The sannyasi indirectly made this known to Lord Nityananda. He said, "Listen, Sripad, shall I bring us some happiness? How often will I get guests like you?" Lord Nityananda, who has himself traveled widely and has seen much, understood that this sannyasi was addicted to drinking wine. The sannyasi repeated several times whether he should bring happiness or not, and Nityananda replied each time, "We must leave right now." The sannyasi's wife was sitting inside looking at the two lords, who she saw were more charming than Cupid. She stared at them as if in meditation. She corrected her husband, saying, "Why do you disturb them during eating?" Lord Vishvambhar inquired aside, "Of what happiness is he speaking?" Lord Nityananda replied, "I think he means liquor." Lord Chaitanya immediately remembered Lord Vishnu and called out his name. Quickly rinsing his mouth and hands, they left the house. They walked to the riverside and jumped into the water of the Ganga and swam all the way to Shantipur to Advaita Acharya's house. The Lord shows his mercy to a licentious debauchee, but annihilates Vedantists if they are offensive to the devotees of the Lord and to the Lord himself. Although this so-called sannyasi used intoxication and intimately associated with women, still the Lord visited his dwelling. He conversed with the sannyasi and gave him instructions, rested, and ate in his house. This sannyasi may not become fully purified in this life, but may have to wait for another birth. However, the agnostics who criticize the Lord and his devotees will never become eligible to receive the Lord's mercy. Even if one is a sannyasi, still, that does not make him eligible to see or meet the Supreme Lord. This is evident from the incident which occurred in Varanasi with the sannyasis there. The last section of this book narrates that when Lord Chaitanya went to Kashi, many residents and some sannyasis heard the news of his arrival. The sannyasis were joyful to receive the news and were eager to meet him, since they had heard much about his exceptional characteristics. These sannyasis were all Vedantist impersonalists, and were well-versed in intellectual matters and in performing various austerities. As lifelong residents of Kashi, they were well-respected. All their impressive qualifications were undermined by a single fault. They taught and explained the Vedanta devoid of the science of devotion to Lord Vishnu. Lord Chaitanya is the supersoul within each individual's heart. He was aware of this, and although he visited Kashi, he did not give these sannyasis the opportunity to meet him. In Varanasi, he stayed at Ramachandrapuri's mat for 2 months without revealing his whereabouts, but spent most of his time in Chandrasekhar's house. He left Varanasi 2 days before the Vishvarup Chandra, the special shaving ceremony on the full moon day during Chaturmasya, followed by Mayavadi sannyasis. He left without public knowledge, and only later the sannyasis came to know that they had missed seeing him. The offense of criticizing the Lord or his devotee, even once, steals a man's proper intelligence. The sannyasis did not feel any remorse at not meeting the Lord. Further, they said, "We are all sannyasis. Why did he leave without first speaking to us? What was the reason he could not wait 2 days and perform the special shaving ceremony, Vishvarup Chandra? By doing this, he has neglected the duties of his order." The intelligence of non-devotional people is spoiled in this manner, and Lord Shiva never accepts worship from such offenders. In fact, Lord Shiva, the Lord of Kashi, metes out punishment to such offenders of the Vaishnavas and takes away whatever little devotion they may have. Lord Gaurasundar has advented specifically to deliver all the fallen souls, with the exception of those who find fault in Vaishnav devotees of the Lord. Thus, Lord Chaitanya ate and rested in a fallen sannyasi's home and avoided the company of the so-called learned Vedic sannyasis just to prove this point. One must be always careful to avoid the Lord's wrath. But those who flout the Lord will suffer eternal punishment in the hands of Yamaraj, the god of death. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Anantashesh, Kamala, the Universal Mother, are constantly engaged in glorifying the Supreme Lord Gaurasundar. Thus, if anyone is so unfortunate as not to be attracted by the sweet nectarian pastimes and qualities of Lord Chaitanya, then all his Vedic learning and austerities as a sannyasi are rendered useless. Happily, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda proceeded towards Shantipur along the bank of the Ganga. As they walked, Lord Chaitanya loudly and repeatedly roared, "I am that. I am that person. Nada has awakened me from sleep and brought me here. He is, I believe, holding dissertations that camouflage the process of devotional service behind a facade of flowery words that present the speculative path of knowledge. Today I will punish him for this. Let the whole world see. I want everyone to see how he defends his bastion of speculative knowledge." While the Lord thunderously rumbled on in this manner, Lord Nityananda kept his silence, smiling in his mind. As Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu swam in the waves of the Ganga, the author recalls to memory Lord Mukunda, Narayan, supine on Anantashesh, lying on the milk ocean. Advaita Acharya, a stalwart amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya, could understand, due to his high devotional merits, that the Lord would react angrily to his presenting the theory of speculative philosophy. So when he realized that Chaitanya and Nityananda had come to Shantipur, he began to speak more vociferously on impersonalistic knowledge. How can one really fathom the devotional mood and activities of the pure devotees of the Lord? Lord Nityananda accompanied the irate Lord Chaitanya into Advaita's house. Advaita swayed in divine pleasure, playing out his part perfectly as an impersonalist. Haridas Thakur offered obeisances to the Lord, falling on the ground like a rod. Achyuta, Advaita's son, also offered his respectful obeisances. Advaita's wife, Sita Devi, offered obeisances to the Lord in her mind and felt very upset seeing the Lord's countenance. The Lord's face and expression aroused fear in everyone's heart. Rumbling with anger, the Lord said, "Hey, you Nada, tell me, which is superior, speculative knowledge or devotional service?" Advaita replied, speculative knowledge is always superior. For what is the use of devotional service if a person is devoid of impersonal knowledge? As soon as these words entered his ears, Lord Chaitanya became inflamed and forgot his surroundings. He pulled Advaita out of his seat and dragged him out to the patio. There he threw him on the ground and struck him again and again. Advaita's wife, Sita Devi, is the universal mother who knows all these confidential topics, yet she could not restrain herself from trying to stop the Lord. "Stop, stop," she cried out. "He is just an old Brahmin. For whose benefit do you chastise him so heavily? He is so old that he may not survive your harsh behavior, and you will find it difficult to avoid the consequences of your actions." Lord Nityananda smiled at her words, and Haridas Thakur repeated Krishna's name in great fear. Lord Chaitanya was so angry that he did not even hear Sita Devi's words. Roaring like angry thunder, he spoke to Advaita. "I was gently relaxing on the milk ocean, and you interrupted my sleep, calling me to attend to your work. You engineered the propagation of devotional service, yet now you audaciously obscure the devotional process with your circumvent explanation of impersonalism. If you had already made up your mind to surreptitiously broadcast your speculative theories, then why did you take the trouble of revealing me to the world? I did not disregard your desires and wishes, but you have deceived me in all respects." At long last, Chaitanya stopped chastising Advaita and went to sit next to the doorway. He spoke loudly, revealing his real identity to all. He said, "O Nada, you know everything. Behold, I am the one who slew Kamsa. Shiva, Brahma, Anantashesh, and Lakshmi Devi are all constantly engaged in serving me. That impostor Vasudev met his end, vanquished by my disc weapon, Sudarshan. That same disc reduced the entire city of Varanasi to ashes. My arrow found its mark and killed the great demon, King Ravana. My invincible Sudarshan severed the arms of Bana and destroyed the powerful demon Naraka. I lifted the Govardhan mountain with my left hand, and it is I who brought the heavenly Parijata flower to earth. I tricked King Bali out of his possessions, and then benedicted him for his mood of surrender. And I also vanquished the terrible demon king, Hiranyakashipu, to favor my devotee, Prahlad." As the Lord revealed his various pastimes, Advaita felt gradually submerged in an ocean of ecstatic bliss. Advaita was more than happy to receive his due punishment in this manner, and he clapped his hands and pranced in joy, feeling peace and humility within. He said, "My Lord, you have rightfully remonstrated me, and I am lucky to get away with so little. Now I am clear about your divine authority, and I am feeling the renewed strength in my relationship with you as your servant." Advaita danced around in ecstasy, and then creasing his eyebrows together, he prayed to the Lord. "Now, where are your flattering words about me? What has happened to all that deceit? I am not Durvas Muni that you can insult me, whose remnants of rice you had smeared on your body. Nor am I Bhrigu Muni, whose foot impression decorated your breast and is known as the famous Srivats. My name is simply Advaita, your eternal and humble servant, and I am always hankering birth after birth to receive your remnants. And by the effect of your remnants, I am unscathed by the ravages of your illusory potency. The punishment is now over, so please give me the shelter of your lotus feet." Saying this, Advaita, the master of Shantipur, fell to the ground and placed his head on the Lord's lotus feet. Hastily and with due respect, Lord Vishvambhar picked up Advaita on his lap as tears flooded the Lord's eyes, cascading down unrestrained. Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur were unable to contain their ecstatic emotions at the sight of such a display of divine devotional fervor, and tears flowed from their eyes in rivers. Sita Devi, Achyutananda, and the servants of the house were crying in intense joy. Advaita's whole house became immersed in love of Godhead. Lord Vishvambhar now felt ashamed after having chastised Advaita so severely, and so he wanted to compensate by offering him a boon. He said, "If anyone so much as takes a little shelter at your feet, be he an insect, worm, animal, or bird. And even if he commits a million offenses against me, I will still grant him my benediction." When Adwaita heard this boon, he fell at the Lord's feet, and crying like a meek child, he said, "Whatever you have said, my Lord, is certainly true. Now please hear and grant me one favor. If anyone tries to follow and worship me, but does not serve your lotus feet, then let that so-called devotion to me vanquish him. I cannot accept anyone who does not serve you. He may be my son or servant, but I shall consider him a great offender and shall never see his face. I cannot accept anyone who does not serve you. He may be my son or servant, but I shall consider him a great offender and shall never see his face, because I cannot bear to see anyone neglect your lotus feet. Those who worship you automatically become my dearest friend." Sometimes one may supersede your worship and approach up to a million demigods, but those demigods will never entertain him. Instead, they will surely squash him by some deception. All that I have said are not my own concoction, but are the verdict of the scriptures. The story of Sudakshina's death from the Puranas is the proof. Sudakshina was the son of the king of Kashi. A great devotee of Lord Shiva, he was always immersed in meditation on his Lord. Being satisfied with his worship, Lord Shiva appeared to him and said, "Ask for a boon, and I shall fulfill your heart's desire. Also, perform the special yajna of Abhichar in order to master extraordinary powers. But be very cautious that you do not belittle or offend any Vaishnav devotee of the Lord. If you do, you will be immolated." Sudakshina had no way of detecting the intention behind Lord Shiva's words, so he duly performed the Abhichar sacrifice according to his Lord's instructions. Out of the sacrificial fire appeared a terrifying form, possessing three hands and legs and three heads, and stood towering over him. It said, "Ask for your boon." The prince replied, "Go and burn down the city of Dwarka." The giant creature became visibly sad and understood that the prince's order could never be fulfilled. He nevertheless went to Dwarka on his request, and upon his arrival, he was immediately attacked by the omnipresent and ever-watchful guard of Dwarka, the Sudarshan Disc. No one can escape the wrath of Sudarshan, and so the giant submitted himself at the lotus feet of Sudarshan and said, "The powerful sage Durvas could not escape from you, and neither could you be contained by such great personalities as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. What can an insignificant person as myself do against such an exalted Vaishnav as you, Lord? I have no avenues of escape now, and you are free to do anything with me you like. All glories to you, my Lord, who is famous as Sudarshan. You are as powerful as my own Lord Shankar, and the abode of Lord Krishna. All glory to you, who possess the form of a disc, and is the best amongst the Vaishnav devotees. You instill fear in the hearts of the miscreants and protect the pious." Sudarshan was appeased by the giant's prayers, and he told him to return to the prince who had sent him and destroy him by fire. The terrifying giant returned to the prince of Kashi and destroyed him. "Sudakshina tried to override you, my lord, and tried to worship Lord Shiva with the yajna, but the result was that he met his death by this same sacrifice. Similarly, I say that those who approach me dismissing your lotus feet, I destroy them. You are everything to me. You are the Lord of my life, my most precious treasure, my father and my mother, my dearest friend. I cannot tolerate such offense at your lotus feet." There are many examples of this point in the scriptures. King Satrajit once met the sun god, and becoming attracted by his brilliance, personally began worshiping him. But then, once he disobeyed your orders, and due to his offense, he and his brother were killed, and the sun god saw all this with satisfaction, since he had been very upset that Satrajit had disobeyed your instructions. Duryodhan was a disciple of Lord Balaram, but because he disregarded you, he and his entire race were eliminated. Hiranyakashipu became practically invincible by the boon of Lord Brahma, and this made him insolent and inimical towards you. So he also died along with his race of demons. The ten-headed Ravana was the most powerful king of his time, having received a boon from Lord Shiva. He was offensive to you and challenged you, so he and his entire family were vanquished. O Lord, you are the root cause and the supreme Lord of all the demigods. Everything and everyone, seen and unseen to human vision, is your servant. If one tries to worship the servant but disregards the Lord and Master himself, then the servant cannot tolerate this offense, so he makes a show of accepting the worshiper's worship, but finally he personally destroys him. Worshipping demigods like Lord Shiva directly without worshipping you is like watering the branches instead of the root of the tree. You are the original cause of the Vedas, the Brahmins, sacrifices, and religious practices. I despise that person who disregards your lotus feet. Lord Chaitanya greatly appreciated Advaita's highly confidential and esoteric prayers, and he spoke out in a voice that resembled a thunderclap. Now listen to me attentively. I say truly, those who worship me directly but neglect my servants and devotees are most despicable wretches, who by doing so cut my body into pieces. Their worship is like burning cinders on my body. He who criticizes and offends my devotee, my name which fulfills all desires, will vanquish him. In this way, I show my compassion for him. Every living entity is my servant, and so I cannot tolerate any violence to them. I destroy anyone who tries to hurt my servants. What to speak of you, Advaita? You are more dear to me than my own body, and any disrespect shown to you is dealt by me with severity. Even if a sannyasi offends a pure devotee, he falls down from his vow and deviates from his religious practices. Raising both his arms, Lord Gaurachandra declared to the world, "Give up the offensive attitude of criticizing Vaishnavas and chant Lord Krishna's holy name. Anyone who practices this will surely be delivered by me." Lord Chaitanya's words gripped the devotees in a wave of unrestrained joy, and they broke out in chanting the Lord's name loudly. Advaita Acharya wept in ecstasy, catching the Lord's lotus feet, and the Lord held Advaita in his endearing embrace and wept. Advaita's loving devotion flooded the entire universe. Such is the wonderful character and activity of Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who then can really understand his words? The seemingly abusive exchange between Advaita and Lord Nityananda can be perceived only by those elevated souls who have reached that state of bliss beyond material influences. The words and activities of the Supreme Lord and his pure devotees, the Vaishnavas, can be understood and appreciated only by their mercy alone. Discussions of such spiritual nature between Advaita, Nityananda, and other devotees can be realized by Lord Ananta alone, who then sings these with innumerable mouths. Lord Vishvambhar glanced at Advaita coming out of his ecstatic engrossment and spoke with a smile. "I have chastised you in a moment of childish frivolity." Advaita replied, "All such pastimes are not factual, but performed to delude us." The Lord said, "Listen, Nityananda, you must kindly forgive me for my reckless act of immaturity." Nityananda, Haridas Thakura, and Advaita Acharya exchanged glances amongst each other and then burst out in uncontrolled laughter. Lord Vishvambhar always addressed Sita Devi, Advaita's wife, as mother. She was a symbol of chastity, always serving her husband to his full satisfaction. Now Lord Vishvambhar went to her saying, "Go quickly and prepare a sumptuous feast for Lord Krishna, and after offering it to him, we shall partake of his remnants." The Lord then left to take his bath in the Ganga, along with Advaita, Haridas, Nityananda, and others. Everyone was in a gay mood. Such unbounding joy and spiritual bliss seen in the Lord's nature is described in detail in the Vedas. On returning to the house from his bath, he washed his feet and prostrated himself before Lord Krishna. Seeing the Lord in a prostrated position, Advaita fell at the Lord's lotus feet, and Haridas also, in the ecstasy of devotee association, fell at the feet of Advaita. Lord Nityananda witnessed this wonderful scene with feelings of spiritual bliss surging within him. Here, then, was the transcendental bridge of the three expansions of Godhead, linked directly to the highest spiritual abode. Rising from offering obeisances to Lord Krishna, Lord Vishvambhar noticed that Advaitacharya was at his feet, and he became very embarrassed. He chanted Vishnu, Vishnu, in humility. The Lord then took Advaita's hand and entered the eating room with Nityananda in his familiar, charming way. The three Supreme Personalities sat down to eat. Each one of them was always animated with spiritual ecstasy, and Lord Nityananda acted, as was his nature, as a highly restless young boy. Sitting away from them by the door was Haridas Thakur, who was spiritually elevated enough to see these different transcendental pastimes. Sita Thakurani, Advaita's wife, a most spiritually exalted and versatile lady, was serving them and remembering Lord Hari all the time. She served them delicacies like flavored rice, ghee, milk, sweet rice, and they ate with pleasure and vivacity. Advaitacharya began to laugh at Nityananda. They are, in fact, both the same Supreme Personality, but have become two absolute entities to participate and assist in Lord Krishna's pastimes. Just towards the end of their meal, Lord Nityananda became overly restless like a child. He picked up the rice from his plate and threw it all around, and then laughed out in childish glee. Lord Vishvambhar cried out in great concern, while Haridas Thakur could not check his laughter. Advaita pretended to be inflamed into a rage and revealed the truths about the absolute nature of Nityananda. He angrily said, "This Nityananda is a drunkard, and his company has corrupted my caste. He cannot say who his guru is, nor the place of his birth. He simply introduces himself as a sannyasi. No one knows him or his caste and family. He always walks around swaying like a drunken, mad elephant. Previously, he was eating in the houses of aliens, and now he has come here, trying to mix with the Brahmins. I say thrice truly to you, Haridas, that this drunkard will destroy everything." Working himself into a fit of fake rage, Advaita threw off his clothes, and clapping his hands, he pranced about in unrestrained glee. Lord Vishvambhar started laughing at Advaita. Such was his nature that both old and young equally find his character stimulating. Nityananda also shook with laughter, pointing his fingers at Advaita, who was exhibiting such amusing postures in his pretended rage. After a while, when they were again well composed, they rinsed their mouths and hands, and then they embraced each other, experiencing ecstatic bliss. Both Advaita and Nityananda are like the two hands of Lord Chaitanya. There is no enmity, but everlasting annuity between them. Their quarrels are simulated and meant to support Krishna's pastimes. Such are the childlike mannerisms of the Supreme Lord and his pure devotees. Lord Chaitanya passed his time in this manner in Advaita's house. Engrossed in ecstatic bliss, he performed Sankirtan. These supramundane activities can be understood by Lord Balaram alone. Others cannot fathom the absolute excellence of the Supreme Lord's nature. By the blessings of Lord Balaram, one is able to repeat these pastimes of Lord Chaitanya because Saraswati Devi, the goddess of learning, seems to dance on his tongue. All these pastimes I have compiled, having no idea of the chronological sequence. I have simply presented them as they appear to me, and it was possible merely by the mercy of Lord Krishna. I therefore offer obeisances at the feet of all the beloved devotees of Lord Chaitanya and beg their forgiveness of the offenses I might have committed in this endeavor. After a few days of sojourn in Advaita's house, Lord Chaitanya returned to Navadvip and his home, accompanied by Lord Nityananda, Advaita, and Haridas. When the news of the Lord's return to Navadvip spread around, all the Vaishnavas hurriedly flocked to meet the Lord. Bubbling delight was written on everyone's face. The sight of Lord Chaitanya's moon-like face immediately dissipated their distress, and they fell at his feet weeping. The Lord was their most precious soul. He lovingly embraced everyone who had come to meet him. All his devotees were like his own expansions, compassionate and exalted Vaishnavas. All the devotees then offered obeisances to Advaita, who was the cause for Lord Chaitanya's advent. Jubilantly, they met each other and began to playfully and loudly talk about Krishna's pastimes with the Lord. Mother Sachi was extremely happy to see her son again, and together with Vishnu Priya Devi, offered grateful thanks to their deity. All this can be fully described by Lord Ananta alone. He is my life and soul. There is no difference between Lord Balaram and Lord Nityananda except their names, just as the three different words, Dvija, Vipra, and Brahman, mean one and the same thing. One who hears with devotion these pastimes of the Lord in Advaita's house attains the highest bliss. Lord Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are my life and soul. I, Vrindavan Das, humbly offer this song at their lotus feet.